Living for the Ones, Bonnie Raitt, just like that, her album. Yeah, thinking about the million Americans that didn't make it through the pandemic. Curtis Salgado, The Fix Is In from Damage Control, and it was Boy and Bear with Old Town Blues from Harlequin Dream. It's Undercurrents. I'm Greg McVicker with something maybe you haven't heard before. I hadn't really heard it before either. Looking forward to it. It's the Sacred Shakers coming up in just a minute.
You're listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM.
Every single person since SB8 has been a law has needed to travel out of state. Every single person that's reached our line.
We've been clinging on to Roe versus Wade and the protection that it offered. And it feels as though that protection is being taken away from us. So it feels as though this is a moment of survival. And I think any moments of survival can be very scary.
What did abortion access look like in America when Roe was the law of the land? Tune into KBOO's Roe on the Rocks, a limited series podcast where I investigate this question as I take you through the months leading up to the U.S. Supreme Court decision that effectively overturned Roe. That's Roe on the Rocks, airing Thursdays at 9 a.m. You don't want to miss it.
Hello, I'm your host, Donald Altman, and welcome to Pathways, where you are invited to join us for a visit with leaders in personal and cultural transformation. Since ancient times, primitive civilizations have peered up at the night sky, wondering, where did we come from? Some believed in extraterrestrials, others even worshiped them as divine beings. And then there were those who were fearful of the mysterious flying lights. With the U.S. government's recent acknowledgement of UFO sightings, the question of what's out there has become relevant again. The search for alien life can also be understood as a reference point for making sense of our existence in an expanding universe. It may even be a metaphor for how we either avoid or embrace the hidden parts of our own consciousness. Unlocking this deeper understanding can impact our sense of meaning each day. To help explore the subject of UFOs, consciousness, and our place in the cosmos is Randall Fitzgerald. As a journalist, his path-breaking investigative articles have been featured in the Washington Post, the Wall Street Journal, and Reader's Digest, where he spent over two decades as a roving editor. In addition to having authored 10 books translated into a dozen languages, he founded and co-edited Second Look, a seminal magazine chronicling the search for life in the universe, the origins of civilization, and the nature of consciousness. He was also a senior editor of Phenomena, a magazine that examined such topics as near-death experiences, sites with mystical histories, UFO sightings, ghosts, and more. Randall has appeared on ABC's The View, The Oprah Winfrey Show, Dr. Oz Show, CBS's 48 Hours, and hundreds of other television and radio shows, including four appearances on Coast to Coast with George Noory. His books, Lucky You and The 100-Year Lie, were Amazon bestsellers. And his new book, Alien in the Mirror, is a complete resource of theories and evidence about alien visitation. Featuring a foreword by internationally known researcher and scientist Jacques Vallée, Alien in the Mirror brings refreshing clarity and sanity to a topic long shrouded in smoke and mirror confusion. Well, it's an honor and a pleasure to have Randall Fitzgerald here with us today. Hello, Randall, and welcome to the Pathways Show.
Hello there, fellow Earthling.
Well, it's a pleasure to have you. You were on the show some years ago for the book Lucky You, and talking about ideas related to intuition and consciousness, and now you're in the UFO area. How did you make this leap? And maybe you could tell us a little about your background.
I think I was always alienated as a child, and so I developed an interest in, or at least a curiosity, to investigate what mysterious out there maybe in the realm of extraterrestrial life and UFOs, but that was early on, like 1964. I was a 13-year-old in East Texas, and maybe I was looking for escape. Maybe that was the unconscious reason for my interest or fixation in that subject area. But I'd always had an interest in the mysteries of life in general, and certainly whether or not UFOs exist or not became one of those curiosities that sort of shadowed me all through my adulthood.
Well, you know, it's interesting. I think that Carl Jung talked about UFOs as kind of being that, it could possibly be that unexplained part of our own consciousness that we couldn't grasp, and so we projected it outward onto some alien being. What do you think about that idea?
And I like his ideas about the unconscious mind projecting onto phenomena that is unexplained or unexplainable. Now, it could be the collective unconscious. You know, he talked in terms of how archetypes can be projected or manifested from the collective unconscious. And he wrote a book that was published in 1959 about the UFO phenomenon, where he applied his ideas of archetypes and the collective unconsciousness onto the UFOs that were being reported as possible projections. I always found that fascinating from the standpoint of my own ideas as they have evolved over time, which sort of place the entire phenomenon not in a nuts and bolts alien visitation realm of ideas, but rather in the realm of the psychology of the phenomenon, which I found to be equally fascinating.
Yeah, what do you think was it that maybe drove some primitive civilizations to have stories of alien visitation? And what evidence is there of that?
Based on one section in the book about the ancient astronaut theories, where I examine the theories and evidence about ancient cultures and ancient builders, like the builders of the pyramids and Stonehenge and so forth, it always seemed to be that humankind has had a fixation on the sky. Of course, sitting around campfires at night, looking up at the sky, I think that was probably a stimulant for many of the myth-making stories that became verbal traditions in primitive cultures. And then ancient civilizations, as they evolved, all talked in terms of the gods and visitations by the gods and how the gods are present among us, etc. And in ancient Sumer, there were the traditions of gods, in fact, visiting who looked like amphibians. They came from the water, according to the Sumerian traditions. And these gods bestowed civilization on our ancient forebears, according to the Sumerian perspective. So, yes, we've always, as a species, had these sorts of traditions that have evolved irrespective of the culture. And the differences in terms of how the explanations are given in the oral and then the written tradition only vary according to the cultural overlays of the culture.
So the culture was kind of a filter that...
Yes. Right. And of course, many of the fears of ancient peoples extending even into the present day, fears of the unknown, fears of the other, the alien, all of that seems to have its roots in these ancient cultures that felt that the gods were a part of us and yet apart from us. And in Jungian terms, of course, that could be part of the projection that was being done in each culture to put a human face on the unknown.
You know, I find it interesting you're talking about how some of these ancient cultures viewed these visitations as gods or divine beings. And how can you be an atheist and still believe in alien visitation?
Yes, certainly, I suspect that's true. I must confess, though, in my own background as a journalist for newspapers and magazines, in interviewing people that are both believers and skeptics and cynics, and there are distinguishing features of those categories.
Maybe you could explain those three categories. That's interesting. Are those the three primary categories when it relates to...
Well, we have the believers, of course, and the believers, as my book points out, have a multitude of theories about what this phenomenon is, what it represents, whether or not we're being visited by technologically advanced aliens from another star system that got here in nuts and bolts craft, or whether the theories have to do with interdimensional portals or time travel, or go down the list. As I say, a multitude of theories, and the evidence that's used, usually circumstantial evidence to try to support these theories, help enshrine the believer in a certain mindset attitude about seeking evidence to support a point of view that hardens over time, with time, sort of calcifies, if you will, into a point of view that is considered by skeptics to be an example of naivete and gullibility. Yeah. So if we look at the mindset of skeptics and cynics, in my experience, most people who identify themselves as skeptics, which in dictionary terms is supposed to be about having an open-minded approach in which you evaluate all points of view without necessarily reaching conclusions. Most people who identify themselves as skeptics, in my experience, are usually cynics. And I use a definition of cynic as one who has a sniveling disbelief in virtue. These are people who might well be atheists, for instance. And if they are atheists, and if they are cynics, then generally they will find all of the theories and evidence presented by believers of extraterrestrial visitation to be examples of a lack of critical thinking, examples of fantasy and delusion. So if you were to put these three people in the same room, a believer, a skeptic, and I mean a legitimate skeptic who truly is open-minded, and a cynic in the room, you would find some really stark contrasts on the subject of alien visitation.
So when the U.S. government recently disclosed that they didn't know what that the, I mean they disclosed what that there were actually were sightings that they couldn't explain, how would that change, or how should that change how we view this phenomena?
Well, I've been reading on various websites and listening to podcasts of people in those categories, the believers, the skeptics, and the cynics, as to their response to these revelations over the last few years from the Pentagon and the U.S. government in general. And everyone seems to be using these revelations as examples to support their own hardcore point of view. For instance, in the case of the believers, they're saying, here, I told you so. Here, the government is making these admissions. Whereas the skeptics say, well, they're not necessarily making admissions. except to the extent that they are confessing that even within the halls of government and the military industrial complex, there is doubt and confusion about what this phenomenon is. And then on the other hand, you have the cynics who say, these aren't admissions of anything other than bureaucratic incompetence, that the government can't come to a firm conclusion that this is extraterrestrial or not, because in fact, there is not enough evidence to reach any conclusion, and there's not enough evidence to reach a conclusion from the cynical point of view, because there isn't evidence. It's all filtered through these hardcore points of view.
It's really interesting. I find it almost as a reflection for how people are either believers in God or disbelievers or cynics. Really, with anything, you can this kind of crystallization of our point of view is something that we can look at, right, within ourselves. We can kind of see that.
Yes, we can, if we have self-analytical, critical thinking. If we look at the capacity for critical thinking that skeptics are supposed to have, for example, then everything is subjected to weighing and balancing and assessing. And it's the same with the internal exploration of self. If we're able to be critical about our own hardcore points of view and about our emotional reactions and our reflexive responses to people and ideas and so forth, if we're constantly weighing, then that's part of the pathway for self-growth. So it can be either externalized in our relations with others and with the ideas of others, or it can be internalized. But either way, I think critical thinking faculties are important, especially in this realm of whether or not there is extraterrestrial visitation or not.
Right. And one of the other areas here that I find interesting is, you know, if we're able to open up our mindset and think that we really are being contacted, if there is that possibility, what would that mean for humanity? How would that change human consciousness?
Lots of books have been written on this subject, which I try to cover in summary form in Alien in the Mirror, and the points of view have to do with theologians talking in terms of how the confirmation of alien visitation would, in many instances, undermine people's belief in established religious traditions. That undermining would be sowing doubt and confusion to an extent where people would not know what to believe. And then on the other hand, you have the point of view that confirmation of alien visitation would result in an entire new religion springing up. You know, it would be the religion of worshiping these seemingly advanced beings, whether it's just worshiping the technological advances that they seem to have, or worshiping the hope and the prospect that these visitors are more advanced morally and ethically than we humans are.
Well, that raises a whole lot of interesting questions about the kinds of upheaval collectively that could happen. And could there be a positive side to that?
There could be if we as a species are not just challenging our place in the great chain of being in the universe, based on revelations about advanced civilizations being in contact with us, but if we aren't just challenging, but rather reaffirming that we still have a special place on this planet and in the universe, We have our own unique evolutionary history as a species and as civilizations. And we can't allow ourselves to become masochists and demean our place on the evolutionary scale simply based on a comparison with some other advanced species.
That is an excellent point. And I think that would also go to even comparing ourselves to other humans.
Right? Oh, yes. Yes. One civilization compared to another historically, or one culture compared to another. It would certainly be a very necessary wake-up call for our species to have this evidence confronting us that another species is in contact with us, whether or not we can communicate with them effectively or not. The fact that, you know, whether it's picking up radio signals via radio astronomy on this planet, or whether it's direct contact through visitation, however the contact confirmation occurs, it's still an opportunity for us as a species to collectively reevaluate who we are and why we are.
I think that's really important. Also, to even honor, you know, I think you bring up the idea of honoring here, and that we can honor our own history and the previous civilizations, and not to either judge ourselves as superior or inferior to those, but I think there is a whole evolution of human thought and consciousness occurring on the planet. And the UFO visitation is kind of really focusing awareness on that evolutionary cycle, if you want to call it that.
Mm-hmm. You know, when I was in journalism school at the University of Texas at Austin, and this was back in the early 70s, we were taught implicitly to use critical thinking skills in our approach to every story as journalists, as newspaper reporters, that we would pursue. We initially were taught that there are two sides to every story. We always hear this. Two
or
sides
more.
Yes, yeah. And then we would discover when we would actually be working for a newspaper or magazine and covering a news event, for instance. Yes, there are multiple points of view. There are multiple stories that need to be examined and weighed and counterbalanced. And it's the same with this entire subject area of extraterrestrial visitation and the theories and the evidence. We have to approach it individually as if we are each an investigative reporter. We're each investigating the evidence and to feel into intuitively what feels true for us, but also to weigh that with what logically and objectively seems to be the weight of the evidence.
And, you know, that's what, to me, really is the appealing feature of your book, Alien in the Mirror, is how it really brings together all the different ideas and lets people see for themselves and make up their own mind. It's a very comprehensive look at that. And I was also wondering, how has the internet changed how people are viewing these phenomena?
It seems to have, you know, based on what I've seen as a response to my book, which, of course, as you point out, tries to lay out all points of view so people can use critical thinking to sort through all of the information. What the internet seems to have done is provided a forum for people, again, to reinforce their entrenched points of view. It's happening in politics, but it's certainly happened in this particular realm, because you can find so many hundreds of websites devoted to specific theories, specific pieces of evidence, whether it's the Roswell case from 1947 of the alleged crash of a spaceship and the repercussions of that, to you name it.
It's, and that's in a way a self-selection. So we self-select what we want to believe, and it reinforces our thinking and maybe stultifies it. It concretizes it in some way instead of letting it be fluid. But I'm wondering, is there for you, I mean, you've been in this field a long time, is there something for you that some research that says that you find very compelling or perplexing that we really can't understand and seems to lead you to think, gosh, it really looks like there's something out there?
I have several answers to that question. One is that the title of the book, Alien in the Mirror, is about looking in the mirror and seeing our own reflection back. We are the aliens in a very real sense. And we don't even have to talk in terms of the theory that we were seeded on this planet genetically in order to evolve, and thus our origins really are elsewhere. I mean, we can talk in terms of stardust and so forth, that we're all made of stardust. But beyond that, there's another theme here, and that is, in a planetary sense, as a species, we are aliens searching for answers. We're searching for answers to life's mysteries and trying to explain what may be unexplainable, at least given our current level of evolution as a species. And beyond that, I'm thinking in terms of consciousness, you know, and this has always intrigued me, that the psychology of this phenomenon is such that, much as Carl Jung pointed out in his book in the 50s, what we have is consciousness being a mirror where we project not only our preconceived points of view and our wishful thinking and our hopes and dreams and aspirations on whatever this phenomenon is, but we have consciousness being reflected back to us. In many of the UFO sightings and alleged abductions and so forth that I have examined, there is a consciousness element to it where the phenomenon itself seems to be interacting with the human observer and interacting in such a way to where we have an opportunity to learn from the experience itself by integrating our point of view, our awareness, our consciousness with this phenomenon, whatever it is, and not necessarily drawing judgments about what it is, but rather being content to be in the gray area of the question marks and allowing that open-minded, skeptical analysis to be a part of who we are in the phenomenon.
Well, that is very fascinating. It's a wonderful place, I think, to end our talk. We thank you, Randall. I would have loved to explore this further. There's a lot more we could talk about, but we've run out of time. Let's be sure to tell our listeners about your website, alieninthemirror.com. That's one word, alieninthemirror.com. And that's where you can learn more about Randall's books and his work. For those who tuned into the Pathways show late, this is your host, Donald Altman, author of several books on mindfulness, including my newest, The Simply Mindful Coloring Book, and Simply Mindful, a 7-week course and personal handbook for mindful living. Information about my courses, books, and CDs can be found at mindfulpractices.com. In a second, I'll tell you how you can rewind and replay this interview whenever you want via the internet or as a free podcast. Today, we've been visiting with author Randall Fitzgerald, an expert in the fields of unexplained phenomena and consciousness. I want to say thank you to all of our listeners for tuning into Pathways, which is broadcast and streamed via KBOO FM Sunday mornings at 8:30 USA Pacific Time. Podcasts of today's show, which you can listen to and forward to others, are available for free at divination.com. That's spelled divination.com, as well as via iTunes and other free podcast servers. This is Donald Altman, reminding you to tell your friends about Pathways Radio and podcasts. Thanks again to Randall Fitzgerald and to all of you listeners for tuning in and being a part of the Pathways conversation.